As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Hey, you! Yeah, you, listening to the radio. This is straight from Broadening Your Horizons. Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, with your host, the multi-talented Claudio, written and spoken word artist extraordinaire, master storyteller, visual artist, master chef, and stage manager to the stars. We're on the radio.
That's right. We're on the radio. And now, bringing back the art of the spoken word through narratives and poetry, the Richard Burton of the Triangle, the Richard Harris of Carborough, the artist of whom reviewer Alan R. Hall has said his writings and performances are a true tribute to the written and spoken word. Our own Renaissance man, storyteller, narrator, author, classical poet, actor, adventurer, photographer, visual artist, gourmet chef, entertainer, and show host, the bard of WCOM, host of Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, here's Claudio.
Good morning, and that's John Paul trying to get me a job. John Paul himself, composer, conductor, musician.
That's right, I'm waiting for calls. Come on, call in now, and we'll do, this is the Claudio Employment Project.
I was absolutely John Paul on a fishing trip for Get Claudio a Job. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from WCOM 103.5 FM. I've got my co-host John Paul in the studio. Got a fascinating morning coming up. We've also got the independent film director and one of the sponsors of my show, John Demers, sitting by. He's film director, actor, whatever it takes.
I am, and I'm actually doing it. Last night I had my first part in a short film since my illness.
Oh, good.
And that went really, really well. And so I was very pleased with that. And so I'm getting back into the grind, man.
Fantastic, man. I know.
Watch out.
And he's still in recovery here.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
He is.
And before
but he's
we take
doing
this,
well.
Absolutely.
I'm doing
before
well.
We take
Thank
this
you.
Too far, I want to go ahead and announce my underwriters, that being one of them, of course, being John Demers in Studio in the Woods.
Thank you.
And
the phone is ringing. Let's go ahead and answer that.
Okay, let's find out who that is. Since nobody's supposed to be calling yet.
This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. You're on the air.
Who have we?
Who's on the phone?
Well, thanks for playing.
Is there anybody on the phone?
Yes, this is Gerald LeBaron.
Oh, Gerald. Okay, I wasn't expecting your call just yet.
I can call you back.
No. Stay on if you don't mind me just going through my little announcing to begin the show with.
Oh, not at all.
Good to hear your voice, and I'll be right back at you. Just want to announce that the Carolina Theater is our Golden Voices sponsor here for the Speakeasy, and I want to also mention that you've got what they've got coming up on Thursday, August 13th at 8 p.m. They're kicking off the 14th annual Carolina Gay and Lesbian Film Festival with a hilarious and unpredictable cast of logo smash hit Sordid Lives, a stand-up comedy all-star spectacular featuring the sassy and spunky Caroline Ray, the salacious Golden Girl Rue McClanahan, and the warped mind behind the sordid franchise, Dal Shores. I think tickets are going to be $39, $34, and $32. Special VIP meet and greet packages, $80, but you can check with the Carolina Theater. And the way of checking there would be 919-560-3030. Go to www.carolinatheater.org, which is on 309 West Morgan Street, downtown Durham. I think weekdays, once the festivals are underway, they're going to be running from the, let me get this straight, 14th all the way through the 16th. 14th of August through the 16th. And this shoots off a day ahead of time. And the weekdays for those events will be 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., 6:30 to 9 p.m. And 1 hour before showtime is always recommended. Weekends, 1 p.m., 9 p.m., and 1 hour before showtime. Anyway, that's the Carolina Theater of Durham. a Golden Voices sponsor here for the Speakeasy.
Yeah.
And we might as well get our guest of honor back on. We were going to do a few things to introduce you, but...
Well, we can still do that.
You beat us to the punch.
That's okay. Gerald's phone, I think.
Yeah.
You still there, Gerald? Continue.
Yes, I'm here.
Are you calling from a landline or cell phone?
I'm calling from a landline. Is it not a good connection?
No, it's fine. There's just some extraneous noise we're hearing occasionally. It sounds like maybe somebody was trying to call you a minute ago.
I was actually grabbing my cell phone and then I dropped it.
Oh, that's what that was. Okay,
turning it off.
We just want to make sure we get a good archive copy for you. So if there's actually static on the line, we'd rather you call again. But if you think it's okay, we'll maintain.
I think it's fine, actually.
Is it fine? Okay, now.
Yeah,
okay,
it's fine.
Great.
Sounds good now. Stop dropping stuff. we thought we'd go ahead and introduce you. John Paul pulled up the information about you in your little speech on computer, and we thought we'd roll with that, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Yeah, this is from the website, Honor in Office.
And, of course, I've got John DeMers sitting by. He actually came to the studio.
Yeah, I'm in studio. Hi, Gerald.
Hi, John. How's it going?
It's going great. Talked to some people having coffee this morning, so we'll get some more Facebook folks, and we'll talk about that later. I'm going to let my man Jean-Paul take it now.
And here we are. We're going to introduce John LeBaron, who has got a movement going, and I would say it's something truly worthy of attention. He wants to bring back honor in office, and I'm sure that's going to be a chore. Putting integrity and honor back into politics.
And this is from the website. This is a minute and 37 seconds of Gerald talking about honor in office. And the website is honorinoffice.org, putting integrity and honor back into politics. Here we go.
Welcome to Honor in Office. My name is Gerald LeBaron, and I'm the executive director. Now, for those of you who already know what we're about and you want to help out, just click the Take Action link above. For those of you who want a little more information, let me tell you what we're about. I am sick and tired of our politicians passing laws that are literally hundreds of pages long without ever having even read it, let alone understood it. And that's what we're about. We want our politicians to read the bill. And so we've written a piece of legislation that requires that. And that's where you can help out. So what I've done is I've written a piece of legislation, and I want to get passed in every single state in the nation, and I want your help with it. And that really is what we're about. This piece of legislation is really simple. It says, you have to read the bill before you vote in favor of it. So take a look around, see if it's something that you really think is important, and if it is, by all means, I'd love to have your support. Thank you very much.
And I guess we'll just get out of the rest of that because it's just music and visuals. So,
and that, ladies and gentlemen, is Gerald LeBaron, who's calling us from, I want to say, is it L.A.?
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Are you calling from L.A.?
Yes, I am.
Just want to let the public know where what geography you hail from at this point. I think that was a very good opening statement, but I also want people to understand that you're also involved in the arts. Since the Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else covers sort of the artistic and the philosophical as well as the political occasionally, but I want people to understand a little more about you personally before we go into this more political agenda.
So sure.
Give us a little background. You're a film producer. You're a screenwriter. I'm gonna let you take the wheel on that.
All right. Well, what I did is about 10 years ago, I wrote my own screenplay. Now, when I wrote it, I didn't actually have any, I hadn't, you know, taken any classes or courses or anything like that, and mm-hmm. So the screenplay that I wrote actually wasn't very good, because it's an art, and you have to know what you're doing in the art. But I do have a fairly strong background in marketing and sales, and I called quite a few producers and faxed and sent query letters and got a pretty good response from those producers in terms of requesting to read the screenplay. Of course, the screenplay wasn't very good, so it didn't go anywhere. But at the same time, while doing that, going through that whole process, I discovered how hard it was to actually get your screenplay sold. And from that, I developed an internet company that helped screenwriters get their scripts sold or optioned, and eventually get movies made.
Give us the name of that company, if you would.
Inktip, inktip.com, like ink of a pen and tip of a pencil. And I'm not a producer myself, but what I am is more of a portal, similar to like eHarmony or any of those other, you know, where basically a producer comes in and he goes, this is the kind of writer I'm looking for, and then those types of screenplays or writers come up, and then they're able to literally read the script right then and there. And we get about 19 movies made a year through Inktip because of that resource. So it's the only type of site on the net that actually gets those kind of results.
Amazing! Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And how do you know John Demers?
John is a writer.
Yes, That's how that came to be. Because he says you guys go back about 10 or 15 years.
I'm a subscriber to inktips.com.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. So you guys met, what, 10 or 15 years ago?
Well, we've only been around for 10 years. I'd say it was closer to about 7 years. Is that about right, John?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's probably still on antibiotics and he was guessing. So loophole us into this new agenda that you have. It's certainly... certainly one that I am fully in support of, because I think we've got a bunch of incompetents out there doing our bidding, and I would certainly love to see a movement like this catch on.
Well, I don't know if it's as much incompetence as it is corruption.
Oh, both, no doubt.
I'm not sure they're as bright
as we need them to be either.
Well, John has a good point.
I'm not so worried about their intellectual capabilities as I am about their honesty and their
will to look at what they're doing.
The integrity.
But part of the problem that we face is that, and it's so typical, it's always everyone else's congressman is corrupt, not mine. And so we have to come up with a very clever way of putting them on the hook. And this is one of those clever ways, because this way you can say, well, it's not mine, but this is a good idea. He should be willing to agree that he has seen the legislation and read it before he votes on it.
Yeah, I would say otherwise he goes completely against his job description.
Well, you know, if you think about it, if people don't care what is written in the legislation, if what they really are involved in is being supported by whoever donates huge amounts of money to
special
their campaign,
interests, yes.
Lobbyists.
Then why should they read the legislation? They don't care what's in the legislation.
Right. They don't want to know. Anyway, back to you, Gerald. I'm going to let you take the helm at this point.
I'm going to agree with John in that when you speak with these legislators and you get to know some of them, excuse me one second, they're pretty intelligent guys. And it literally is that they've just lost their integrity. They've lost their way. And, you know, when you're talking about either a 50-page bill, a 100-page bill, or even a 1,000-page bill, when that legislator decides he's not going to read it and understand it, then like John said, you have a situation where they are taking somebody else's word for the content.
Indeed.
It's like if you're going to go to buy a house, and somebody says, oh, well, this is a great house. It's worth the $600,000 that you're going to pay for it. And you say, okay, let me just sign on the dotted line. Nobody does that. You don't even buy a car that way, and the car is much less expensive.
Right.
And our politicians both on a state and federal level, have absolutely no problem just taking somebody else's word for the content of a bill.
You know, I don't buy a candy bar that way.
Is that right?
You know, no. I look at a candy bar, and I look at what's in it. And I, you know, it says right there on the front of it what it is. And
cyanide.
I pick it up and look, okay, well, that's chocolate with nuggets and almonds. Okay, I like that.
Preserved with cyanide.
I'll vote that's for that.
Back to you, Gerald.
Yeah, or you buy a computer, or you're deciding what insecticide you're going to use for your garden,
right.
Or you decide you're going to hire a contractor. You're gonna look at the instructions there, and it literally is. As soon as that person goes, well, I'm going to take so and so's word for it, then we're in trouble. If you take a look, because everybody's more familiar with Congress, I think, than they are with the state. So I think the federal level is a better example.
I didn't know we had a Congress, actually.
Yeah.
I'm still not absolutely convinced. I'll be the devil's advocate here today.
Yeah, well, they're not debating like they should be, that's for
right.
sure. But when you take a look at that, you take a look at the TARP program, which is the 2008 bailout, and we had $350 billion paid to financial institutions, and we only got $271 billion worth of stock. So in the blink of an eye, the American people lost $79 billion because we paid 50% higher for the stock than we actually should have. It's like mm-hmm. going out and buying a car that's only worth $30,000 and paying $45,000 for it,
yep.
except on a much, much bigger level.
Right.
And
yep.
they did this because someone else said, oh, this bill is okay. It's you know, it's what was it? I think it's 441 pages long. Yeah, you don't need to read that. It's going to do such and such. And then they just take somebody else's word for it without ever mm-hmm. taking a look at it themselves.
That's right. That's right.
Extraordinary, yeah. yeah.
So the thing is that if we're talking about a bill, in California we're allowed the initiative state, in North Carolina we're allowed to submit initiatives and get on a ballot, whereas in North Carolina that option isn't available. But still, we can do a similar thing there as well.
How is it not available?
There's no referendum initiative available in North Carolina.
No. What we do is we go find a representative or a legislator, senator, representative, mm-hmm. and have them sponsor the bill.
To make it an issue, I got
yeah.
you.
And of everyone that we have in this state, someone will see this as a very good issue for them and a very good
right.
platform for them to
sure.
say, hey, let's put this on the ballot. Let's talk about this. Let's debate this. This has merit.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about abortion. This isn't about guns. This isn't about bailouts. This is about, are we reading what we're voting on?
It's certainly not partisan.
I mean,
yeah.
it isn't.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with party politics. No. Whether I would rather have a person in office whose ideologies, I guess you could say, are completely different than mine, as long as I know that they're actually going to read the bill and examine it to make it as good as it can possibly be. I don't care what party they belong to.
Right, which
you
is
know,
in their job description for the position they hold.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the thing is when you do read a bill, whether it's 5 pages long or 1,000 pages long, one thing that can't help but come into play if you're actually trying to read it to understand it is that common sense can't help but come into play.
Mm-hmm.
It just can't help it. Even if it's just to a small degree, at least it's to a greater degree than if you didn't read the bill at all.
If nothing
right.
else, they can engage somebody to read it to them.
That's
well,
right.
the problem with that is, and I had this conversation with Gerald the other day, I don't remember what day, but here's the process you have, and it's starting to happen here in this state with the recent additional move into our state by lobbyists from Richmond that came from Washington, D.C. They moved into the Richmond area, and now they're also down in North Carolina. That's an expansion of a law firm. But the point is this. If you have a U.S. senator or a member of the House of Representatives in Congress in Washington, these people have massive staffs now. It used to be it was them and a few folks, but now it's massive staffs, and the staffs actually have staffs that deal mm-hmm. with specific issues. And what happens is, and this certainly was the case with a lot of these bailout funds, is you late at night, congressmen are doing whatever they do. They're out with their constituents. They're out late night dinner. They're in session.
Or they're at C Street.
Or they're at C Street. or K Street, which in many ways is just as bad. But they're actually, these staffers are there with various lobbyists and lawyers, and they're writing this stuff, and they're just pumping it in there, and they're basically text messaging their boss, their legislature member, the senator or the congressman, and saying, yeah, this is good. This is in now. What you wanted, what it is. And nobody's reading it. As a matter of fact, I've had folks now tell me recently that they don't know of anyone that actually, an individual who read from the beginning to the end the last bailout, because there was no human way to do it from the time the clerk actually said, it's here, it's available.
Right. It got presented just before the vote. Yeah.
Now, did some people have eyes so that they could say, well, it's been read. If the whole thing's been read? Well, sure. But Who wants to say, well, this person read this paragraph and you read that paragraph?
Right.
Come by my next house with me, guys, and I'll let you read this paragraph and you can read that paragraph, but I'll be the one that signs it, right?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
And in fact, that's the way it's done in legislatures, and not just the U.S. legislature, but in the state legislatures. It's even done at the local level. We just had an example of it here in Chapel Hill with the Carolina North.
That's right.
There was a big conflab about it just before it got presented and passed, and it was clear at that point that most of the people on the city council had not even read the ordinance they were getting ready to vote on from beginning to end. They did not know all of what was in it, and they still went ahead and passed it.
And this is something the public doesn't really spend any time considering.
Well, that's because the lobbyists and the special interests and everyone push so hard that something has to happen. You know, Gerald, the other day when we were talking as well, I think it was you, me, somehow this topic came up. There used to be some meaning to the phrase, it would take an act of Congress to get something done, because things that move so slowly through that process. And now that phrase just doesn't work, because you blink an eye and there's legislation passed that you go, what was that?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And you can, even in California, we had the whole, as you know, California's experienced a budget crisis right now.
Yes.
And I went down there. I went down there to actually watch them pass the budget last week. And they were negotiating right up until the very end. Right up till the very end. So it was really only a few committee members that actually really had at least some kind of an idea as to what was in these budget amendments that they were passing. And the rest of them were just taking some other committee member's word for what was in this what the content was. In fact, there was even a point there where in one of the amendments, it was about 90 pages long, and one assembly member said, wow, this is what, 90 pages long? Does it have such and such in it? And nobody knew.
They don't. Extraordinary. And these are the people we got running the country. That's wild. Flea market politics.
Right. Yep.
Well, here's another advantage.
That's somebody trying to call Gerald, I think.
We're hearing a beep there, Gerald.
Oh, hold on for 1 second.
Might want to cut that phone off.
Really quiet.
That's somebody.
Okay. Yeah, it is.
That's somebody trying to call him.
I think so.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yes.
I think it is.
I don't think you can stop the beep. I think it's somebody trying to call the phone you're on.
No, I don't think so.
No?
You know what? Let me go into
maybe it's us.
Let me go somewhere else and see if it quiets it down. But there's nobody calling me.
No, you're fine.
You're fine. It's just once in a while we'll hear a beep, but that's okay. Are you recording this yourself?
I'm sorry?
Are you recording this yourself?
I am not.
Okay.
Because we will have it archived, and you'll be able to
get it on our website.
It'll be on a podcast.
Yeah.
What was it that actually inspired you to get this program together? I mean, when did this? When did you birth this and put this whole thing together?
What I've been doing is I've been researching this for probably about 2 years now. What actually happened is that it's pretty obvious, both in the when Bush was in office, when he was president, as well as...
We are getting a lot of interference right now. You might want to switch phones.
Okay, good. Let me do that.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's just going to make a bad archive.
No. Don't be sorry
Don't
at all.
Be sorry. No.
Yeah, let me...
Not a problem.
I'll just put... I'm on the head, or, you know, the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we're getting the kind of feedback that you sometimes get when somebody has a radio playing while they're on the program.
I gotcha. Okay, how's that?
That's cleaner.
That's cleaner.
Okay,
very clean.
Good.
Yep.
Anyway, so what I did is I'm dissatisfied with our government, as well as I know you are.
Everyone in this room, yes, indeed.
Yeah, exactly. And so
doesn't qualify to be called a government.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so, you know, I started looking around at term limits, and we've had campaign finance, political reform acts in the state of California for quite some time, and none of them seem to really be, it hasn't resulted in any really good leadership. And so just in looking it over and then doing a little bit of research in history, I found that it seemed to me that the most important thing is is integrity and honor. And if we could pass some kind of law that helped put that in, then we'd be in a better situation. And so I just started figuring out how I could do that. And then all of a sudden it came to me, well, these guys aren't even reading the bill. I mean, the first thing you need to do in order to do any kind of decent legislation or lawmaking is you have
know
to
what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You got to know what you're talking about. So that was how I got into it. I'm a newbie in terms of politics. I'm a concerned citizen. I just want to see our government doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Well, I have what you're talking about sounds very sensible to me, but I do have a few questions about the details.
Sure.
For one, what are the mechanisms for enforcement?
Well, here's the thing here. You can take the California cell phone law. I don't know if you have a law.
Which is, so we're not sure what that is.
Okay.
We don't have one here, but...
You know. Oh, you don't?
No.
Good for you. In California, if you're going to drive and be on the phone, you have to wear an earpiece or a headset. And that's just it's just a silly law.
They're actually trying to pass a law here that we're not allowed to make cell phone calls while driving at all.
They're trying to pass it, but it's not passed yet.
Right. Well, that might be a little bit different. I mean, if they can actually come with some real hard facts and prove, you know, that...
There have been quite a lot of accidents, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, over here, you're still allowed to be on the cell phone. Now, 98% of the people who drive with only one hand on the wheel anyway.
Right.
So, you know, whether you have your phone in your lap, holding a sandwich, putting on lipstick, it really doesn't matter. You're still talking on the phone. Yeah. So it's if the accidents and so forth are much greater due to being on the phone, whether it's in your hand or on an earpiece, it makes no difference.
So what parallel are you drawing here?
Well, the parallel I'm drawing to that is that it's not really an enforceable law because people can put their phone down. You know, they see a cop, they can put it down. It's actually really hard to see. But the bottom line is that you are going to find a percentage of people following the law just because it's the law.
Sure.
And that's all we need. So in terms of enforceability, yes, if someone catches you passing a law without having read the bill and understanding it, it's a felony, and you would go to jail. But the bottom line is that we don't need every single legislator to actually follow this law.
Yeah, because you're going to have a certain percentage that will, and again, it's that embarrassment. It's, you know, if it takes the one legislator to read, you know, 95 or 100 pages, X number of hours, to have someone else show up and say they've done it, I mean, there's just a certain amount of, how could you have read that? I mean, it becomes in itself an issue.
Exactly. And so it's, so in terms of enforcing it, it's not, you're going to have the legislator who isn't going to read it, who has no morals or scruples whatsoever, and he's never going to read any of them, and he's going to go ahead and cite on the dotted line under penalty of perjury. That's just the way it's going to be. But you are going to have a lot of those members, because I believe that most of them came into office wanting to do the right thing, and they just lost their way. Those people will say to themselves, "I'm not going to perjure myself." They're not going to do it, and that's all we need. See, because of partisanship, you have, you know, 48% say Democratic and 52% Republican, or vice versa. And you have, like in California, there's 80 assembly members and 40 state senators.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you've got 37 of them Republican and 43 of them Democratic, all you need is 5 or 6 on each side of the party aisle who are going to say, "I'm not going to sign that. I'm not going to vote on that particular bill until I've read it. And if you call it up for vote today, I'm going to have to vote no." So right then and there, you've actually started getting some due diligence being done. So you don't have to enforce it. Do you understand?
I understand.
Well, I understand that. I do agree that if you just have a few people who actually read it, That's likely to make a big difference in the outcome.
At least they know somebody's watching.
Yeah. However, I still think that, you know, you need to have some way to check up on it. At least, perhaps, included should be some language in the legislation that says every representative or senator has to sign a statement saying that they've read the legislation before they vote on it. Or at least in the roll call, for instance, you could have a response in the roll call during the vote in which the senator declares whether or not they've actually read the legislation or the representative. You see what I'm saying? Some kind of accountability.
You're absolutely right, and I didn't actually make that clear.
I can actually read something here that is a part of the California state ballot measure.
Yeah, because you were talking about enforceability, which is a little bit different than what the legislation is that I wrote.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Did you want to read that, Claudio?
This is something I just got this from John. I hereby certify under penalty of perjury that I have read insert bill number and title in its entirety and understand its contents. A vote in favor of the passage of a bill shall not be counted unless it is determined that the member casting such vote has executed this writing.
That's correct.
This certification requirement shall not apply to committee votes.
Okay, why would we only have a provision for an aye vote vote?
Let me read another one, yeah. And that was this is what, three in parentheses, I'm not quite sure what that means, but I'll read it. Prior to voting on any bill, each member of the legislature shall execute a writing containing the following statement. I hereby certify under penalty of perjury that I have not committed any act in violation of Penal Code Section 86 in connection with, parentheses, insert bill number and title, close parentheses. I further certify under penalty of perjury that, to the best of my knowledge, my vote on bill number and title has not been influenced by any act taken by any person in violation of Penal Code Section 85 and or Section 15 of Article 5 of the California Constitution. A vote shall not be counted unless it is determined that the member casting such vote has executed this writing. This certification requirement shall not apply again to committee votes. Okay.
May I clarify that?
Please.
Yeah, basically, you have a situation where, and this, I believe, is pretty much in every state. California has somewhere around 2,000 bills that are submitted to the legislature every single year. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much it is for North Carolina, but New York State has several thousand more than that. And when you're talking about a bill that could be 5 pages or 100 pages long or even longer, to require someone to read every single bill that comes across their plate would be kind of abusive. What I mean by that is that sometimes you'll get a 50-page bill, and you'll read one paragraph of it, and you'll know that you have fundamental disagreements with that bill, and you would never, ever vote for it in a million years. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why you should have to read that entire 50 pages.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. That makes good sense.
So it's only the ones. So any time you are going to vote in favor of, you know, to pass a bill, you need to have read and understood it in its entirety, and you are required to submit a sworn statement prior to the vote that you have understood it and read it totally.
We certainly need a lot more policing action. I would say that would be that in particular would be a vital one.
Yes. Now on the other ones, because the other two. Section that you read there, that refers to specific penal codes and the Constitution for California. And in it states that our legislators are not allowed to, you know, they're not allowed to be bribed, they're not allowed to vote swap. You know, by vote swapping, I mean, hey, if you vote for my bill, I'll vote for yours.
Yeah,
it's illegal already in the state of California. And you'll never see it happen blatantly, but you can rest assured it's at a much more insidious level.
Oh, I can imagine.
And so they have to attest on a vote, whether it's a yes or a no. They have to say, I have not traded votes. My vote has not been improperly influenced.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what that other thing is for. And that's for every single vote that they ever do. They have to say, I'm voting on this particular bill, and my vote has not been traded. I have not done anything improper about it.
Something requiring them to make an actual affirming statement.
Yeah. That's right.
That they can be held responsible by.
That's right. So in terms of enforceability, they are definitely signing a legal document, and it is under penalty of perjury. And if they perjure themselves, it is a felony. They will get kicked out of office, and provided they're convicted, and they would go to jail, and they'll never be able to be in office again in this particular state.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. I'm going to take a moment just to announce, folks, you're listening to WCOM 103.5 FM. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, John-Paul McClellan.
Hello.
Also have John Demers, independent film director, actor, and whatever it takes. And we have the pleasure of having Gerald LeBaron, who is running, leading Honor in Office, a movement against political corruption. In other words, actually a movement more based on making sure that our legislatures actually read the materials that have to do with laws being passed.
And you can go to his website, honorinoffice.org, and you can find there the statement we played earlier and material describing the effort.
And you can also go to Facebook and join the Facebook page, right, Gerald?
That's right.
Give us that scoop.
What was that?
I'm sorry, give us that scoop.
Yeah, what I'm doing is the great thing about Facebook, if you have a Facebook group, is that you're able to instantly inform your members what is happening right now. You can very quickly update them, and if there's anything that they need to do or a call that they need to make, mm-hmm. Bam, it can get done just like that.
And how do they find this on Facebook?
Well, they just log into their Facebook account, and at the very top right of the page, there's a little search text box. They just type in Honor in Office, three words, and then it'll pull up our Facebook group.
Understand.
Yeah. And the idea is that we get this passed in every state in the nation.
Yeah.
It's not just California. It's not just North Carolina, although these are two very good starts.
True. Yeah,
right.
I'd like to see this spread.
Right.
John, you have a list of of names.
I was thinking, we're over here in Orange County, where Senator Kennard is from, and your representative, Bill Faison. And, of course, I'm from Wake County, where Dan Blue was in the House of Representatives. He used to be our former speaker, and recently, with the passing of Mr. Freeman, one of our senators, Dan Blue, was stepped up to be one of our state senators. But I know Dan Blue. I worked with him back in the mid-90s on a number of things when I was very heavily involved in politics. And I just can't help but sit back and know that Dan Blue, Speaker Blue, would never, ever, ever vote for a piece of legislation that he had not read. And there are times when legislators in this state have abstained from voting because they did not read, which I would rather have someone do that, because if they were at least honest about it, you probably would have more legislation not pass because that hadn't been read. But we have a lot of fine members in our legislature here that just would never, ever do something like that. And we just need to make them aware that there's an opportunity to make sure that the legislators they work with that don't read all the legislation and do follow what the lobbyists tell them to do, that they will help us get this legislation passed. I'm very confident that between now and the next long session, which is in January 2011, there'll be an election in November 2010, and between now and then there are going to be people running for office. Some of them are incumbents, and they're going to take a look at this and realize the value and the importance. And I'm going to make a concerted effort on Gerald's behalf here in North Carolina with a lot of other folks who will help as well in making this a reality.
So.
Right, Gerald?
Yes, indeed.
We have an example in the U.S. Congress of legislation.
John, can I just interrupt
you
for a second there? I just want to make another point that John Demers was saying. What we really want to do in the next election, which is November 2010, is we want to address this much more heavily in the primary. You do have primaries over
yes.
there, right?
Oh,
okay,
yes.
Good.
Oh, yes.
Because that's the opportunity where you can discover which incumbents are actually going to fully support reading the bills and understanding it, and the ones who aren't, and then you can vote people into office who are actually going to support it, and thus reduce some of the corruption.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a good point. And starting early in the primary is a good way, I think, to promote that idea. Exactly.
Oh, yes.
One encouraging thing I'm noticing, not necessarily related to this particular theme, but that there seem to be more and more little public organizations kicking in gear to start manipulating the political aspect of our lives, and I think that needs to. We really need to begin governing ourselves.
Well, I've got friends that are Democrat, Republicans, Libertarian, and Independents, and nobody's happy right now with what's going on
right.
in Washington.
I don't know.
Nobody's happy.
There was just a survey I heard about on the radio a couple of days ago where they just did a survey about right direction, wrong direction, and it's now somewhere around 72% of the voting public believes that the U.S. is going in the wrong direction. And this is after Obama's
Even
election.
With Obama, Obama's not really doing us any favors.
No, and this isn't about political parties again. It's just
it's
about the fact that things are being rushed.
It's about get
pushed.
The job done, folks, and get it done right.
Well, and that's what I was going to mention. A prime example of this is applicable right here in our own district. David Price, our U.S. representative to the United States Congress, I asked him one day, face-to-face, personal, just standing right with him, did you read the Patriot Act before you voted for it? And he would not give me a direct answer, which, of course, means that he did not read
Did you read Mein Kampf before you even went to that?
And I just, I couldn't believe it. I said, this is a monumental piece of legislation.
Creepy
and
as
you're,
hell.
And you're indicating to me now that you did not read this legislation before you voted for it. What in the world is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. Gerald, in some of the research that you've done to prepare for Honor in Office, do you have a graph or do you have a vision of where we really started falling off the boat? I mean, did we just really after September 11 just start letting Congress just rush things? Or where do you see this happening? I mean, I know over time the lobbyists have gotten entrenched, but do you see a magic time there where it really
good,
just became overwhelming and pushed you to do this?
Honestly, not being involved in the political process for the last several decades, it's a real hard thing to figure out. I personally suspect it's been going on for decades.
I suspect the same thing. Yeah.
I believe it's been happening from the very beginning.
That may very well be true.
Probably only time that it didn't happen was with the passage of the original Constitution, the original articles of the Constitution. I think those people read every word and knew exactly what they were voting for.
They took the time to get the job done right.
And in the case of the first 10 amendments, I believe that everyone who voted on those knew exactly what they were voting for. And in fact, if you sit down and decide that you want to read the original Constitution and the first 10 amendments, you can do it all in a period of way less than an hour.
That's right.
It doesn't take very long to read the Constitution and the first 10 amendments. Now, when you start getting into the statutes, then you start to get all this incredible and confusing language. And that's, all, of course, part of the problem. Now, this will be my other point about all this that I think has to be said, which is that, and this is not to say I don't want this legislation to happen, but this has to be said. I don't believe that people without integrity are going to vote any differently because they read the legislation. I do think that some people who have integrity, who don't normally read everything, will be perhaps inspired by reading it to think a little more, and maybe that will make a difference. However, the people who are in the pockets of the big money people, it's not going to change a single thing about how they act.
And in responding to what John brought up here just a few minutes ago, I would like to say that those very people of whom John Paul is speaking of now swept a murderous volume of things under the rug with the haste of 9/11.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Indeed. Without a doubt.
Indeed. Yeah.
And we have to get this back. And I think this is a sensible first step in that direction. I think kind humiliation can be a very, very powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. And just keep on pressing it.
Well, here's the thing here. Like you said, there are going to be those individuals who absolutely are going to continue business as usual. But because we do have, two dominant parties, we really only need a small percentage of them to start behaving themselves.
That's true, just a ripple in the pond to begin with.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. And it may be that this type of legislation will help make that happen.
Yeah, I think it will. Yeah. I think it will. And here's another thing to consider on this, and I don't know if you guys have thought about this, but if you look at Congress, well, where do those members of Congress come from? Well, the vast majority of them were actually previously lawmakers for their states.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about where do these members of Congress start to learn their bad habits, they start to learn their bad habits in the states.
Well, justice system.
In the last decade, we have sent our Secretary of Agriculture to prison. We have sent our Speaker of the House in the last couple of years to federal prison.
Jim Black.
Yeah, we are cleaning. We did some cleaning of house, and I think our state is a little shook up, but I'm still not convinced we cleaned it out.
Tip of the iceberg.
That's right, exactly. Yeah.
Tip of the iceberg.
And now our former governor, who's only been out of office for 3 or 4 months, the federal government is investigating him.
And his wife
who was hired by North Carolina State University, was let go, and the chancellor had to resign. The NC State provost had to resign.
That's big stuff.
I mean, this is big stuff. Right. And the feds, I mean, they are looking at the corruption in there, too. And he's not been out of office 3 or 4 months. So we have this cesspool. So when all this type of investigatory power is coming around and swirling, I see this as just a grand opportunity to come and put this into the face of some folks and say, now, don't you want to try to get a cleaner direction? Wouldn't this help your campaign? I mean, I think back to when I ran, I ran Ross Perot's campaign, and then I split the state in half, and then I endorsed Bill Clinton, and I worked for the Clinton effort to get him on the ballot when Ross Perot really kept flip-flopping all over the place. But with the contacts that I have, I just feel very strongly that if we go out there and we educate the community in which certain elections are going on, and get the fellows that are either or ladies that are incumbents to acknowledge this, someone will pick this up as a primary issue, and they will run with this, and they will make this their banner cause, because they'll say it has nothing to do with Democrat, Republican, it has nothing to do with any of those other issues. What it has to do with is taking the time to know what you're talking about, taking the time to read. And if we all take the time to do that, our lives will slow down a bit.
Absolutely.
You know, the computer is a wonderful tool to research and know information, but it's also a tool that can make you hastily choose choices and make decisions that you can regret because you didn't take the time.
Many responses are based more on hype than actually knowing what's going on. Yeah.
This is true.
And then I would also say that once this is established, that some sort of policing medium for this should also be engaged.
Well, that's a possibility. One of the issues that you run into is that the way the original Constitution was written, as well as most of the constitutions for the states, is that our legislators have a fair amount of immunity. And so to get a piece of legislation actually passed or become law, you do have to be fairly careful in how you write that.
I can imagine, because that can be twisted, no doubt.
Yeah. If, for example, let me give you an example. In the bill that I wrote, it covers the final floor vote. You know, it covers the House vote. So you're in the assembly, and everybody's going to vote. That's the only time that this law comes into place where you have to sign under penalty of perjury that you've actually read it in its entirety. And the reason why we didn't cover committee votes is, for one, when you're involved in the committee, there's so many changes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth that voting on every single one of them would be almost ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the additional thing to that is that our legislators can then argue that their First Amendment rights are being violated because they're not allowed to actually, you know, they've got these encumbrances preventing them from just their freedom of speech in terms of discussing the law. Do you understand?
Yeah,
what I mean?
No, I hear you. Yes.
So you do have to be a little bit careful in that area and write it in such a way to where it's not, you know, too specific or too burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely something you have to keep in mind.
May I ask what kind of reaction you're getting to your I want to call it a movement so far?
Well, like John's experiencing, like you're experiencing, I'm getting people from every single party, Republican,
wonderful,
Democratic, Libertarian, Peace and Freedom, America's Independent Party. They're pretty much all coming on board.
Fantastic. Well, like you said, it is not a partisan issue. It is something that relates to everybody.
That's exactly right. Now, the only people that I'm...
Okay, get it out.
I know somebody doesn't like it. We're going to find out now who.
Who.
The only people who don't really like it are people who work in the legislative process.
Of course. Surprise.
I'm shocked. I would think they're the first to line up to show how spiritedly honest they are with their effort to turn the light on. I'm just shocked to hear that, Gerald. Man, I can't believe it.
I know. That's pretty much it. Anyone who's worked in the legislative process, who's worked in state government, those are the people who go, that's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. Hot. Popcorn popping in an ice box.
Well,
that's impossible. But,
if it's true that it's impossible, then that points to a much greater problem than we have with whether or not people read the legislation.
Oh, we're in a sinkhole anyway.
Well, here's the thing here. You pass a law that you haven't read, that nobody's read, that's 300 pages long or 400 pages long. Inevitably, what's going to happen is that later on down the road, you're going to have to pass a whole bunch more laws to correct the mistakes that were made from passing the first
Absolutely,
law.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you get that going on decade after decade after decade, and all of a sudden you have a situation where you've got thousands of laws that you have to look at every single year just to clean up the things that weren't done right the first time.
Oh, Gerald, tell the quick little story before we run out of time, the one about the building being built and then going and then putting the plumbing on the outside. You know?
Yeah.
Tell that little story real quick on how this works.
Sure. Okay, well, let's say that you're an architect and you're hired to, you know, do the design and the structure and the whole thing for a huge skyscraper. And you're the chief architect. You've got a bunch of junior architects and draftsmen and designers and so forth. And you have those designers, junior architects, and you have them all do the work. And then those guys come up to you, and they show you a picture and a one-page summary of the skyscraper, and you say, yeah, this is great. And then that's what is used.
Mm-hmm.
So then what happens later on down the road is that you come across a situation where you find that the sewer lines for the entire skyscraper, the size of the pipe wasn't large enough. And then the space where the piping is wasn't large enough either, so there's no way you can replace that piping with other piping. You actually have to put that piping on the outside of the building.
Oh my God, yes.
And because you don't pay attention to the design for the new sewer line that's going to go out on the outside of this skyscraper, you end up having that built, and it's still not the right size, and so then you have to do another, and then you have the same problem with the electrical not having the lines of a large enough gauge, and then, of course, you didn't personally, as a chief architect, make sure that everything was right with the engineering, and you find out that the foundation isn't right. And pretty soon, you just have this hideous building that nobody wants to go around. The managers can't seem to lease it out to anybody. There's constant problems that you're having to deal with because lights go out, etc. And pretty soon, the management firm that handles that skyscraper goes out of business.
This is the architecture of the future. Yes, yes.
That's right.
Good Lord.
And what I love about it is that you can take it further by going, well, it's not a problem because now we'll just demolish the building and then we'll get a committee together to study why that land was sinking and figure that out. And then after spending that money, they'll just move it to another location because the study's going to say, well, it's a sinkhole. It just sinks. That's why you know, things just sink there all the time.
Wonder if we can get a couple of planes to fly into it.
If you look at it even further, people won't even read the commission's report because the commission's report's over 1,000 pages.
Oh yeah. It's a spin,
I remember legislators who have said that about various reports. I can remember reading quotes of people from the Warren Commission and subsequent reports after that, even the 9/11 Commission. Legislators have said it. They're so voluminous, you just can't read the whole thing because reporters would hit them with specific questions. So I certainly get all that. Gerald, man, we're going to have some fun in North Carolina getting this going.
Let me know when you get here because I want to come join forces with you folks.
I look forward to it.
Just want to mention very quickly, and I'm going to give John Paul the last word here in a second, that the speakeasy is about to come to a close, but John Paul comes on with his own show right after, which goes a little more politically edgy, which is called John Paul's Truth and Variety Hour.
Truth and Quest.
Truth Quest, thank you. Well, it's better than Truth or Consequences, right, which I've been calling it.
which is really what happens.
And I think he'd love to have you stay on for that, so... at least keep that open.
Yeah, Gerald, if you'd like to stay with us for a little while and bridge over to my show, that'd be great. I'd love to talk with you for a few minutes. I have a couple of other guests.
Is Mr. Demersk going to be able to be available as well?
I will stick around for a few minutes. I have an 11:30 appointment where I'm discussing this topic. So.
I'm going to stick around as well, but I don't know that I'll give much input. I might just sit and listen.
Yeah, we're going to run out of microphones, of course, with all these people here. But that's okay. We'll share mics.
Indeed. So anyway, I just want to thank you for enlightening us so well. And I think this is a movement we should all give a push. I'm going to maintain a little push on this very scenario that you're putting up. And would definitely consider yourself part of the Speakeasy family at this point and come on whenever you have anything to say.
I appreciate it.
We'll make arrangements for it. So on behalf...
We will do updates.
Yes, good. Absolutely.
We will do updates.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and I really support the idea. I think it has a lot of merit.
And John knows how to get through the crack in the door no matter what I've got going on the radio, so there's always room to make an announcement or to point people to this, and then at some point build a bigger agenda.
Excellent.
Want to say next week I've got the Temple Theater director, actress, Broadway star Peggy Taphorn coming on. We'll have her... cute presence around here for an hour.
She's a dynamo.
She's a babe. And I want to remind
Temple
folks
Theater,
to
right?
support
Sanford?
Temple Theater in
Temple
Sanford.
Theater,
yes.
Sanford, yes.
This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. Giving big thanks to Carolina Theater for being a primary sponsor, as well as John Demersk, Studio in the Woods, Inc.
That's
and
right.
For you folks out there listening, thanks for tuning us in. Until next time, this is Claudio. Cheers.
And Speakeasy.
Yes, indeed.